something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT,
Jeremy blows up Massey Hall with an explosive drum solo.
We play a new game, Can 70s.
Plus, is there really tension between Jeremy and me? It's all coming up right now on TNT.
Fucking right, eh?
Well, hello there, Jonathan.
My sister got me an African thumb piano in Africa, and that's what it sounds like. How are you, Jeremy?
Just the one time through sounded like you have a new jingle. It's kind of like one of those like hip new like internet companies that do just the sound effect as opposed to the logo.
Taggart and Torrens brought to you in part by the African thumb piano. It has kind of a nice sound to it, doesn't it, though?
Or if you just like... Okay, so you hit that after I say... After I say this line, okay?
Okay, yep.
Syntesto Industries. Nice.
What is Syntesto Industries?
I don't know. It's some greasy, like, undersell corporate entity that buys up things. Stomps on people.
I thought it was the name of your new band.
Oh, that would be terrible. Wouldn't that be... That would definitely make us a prog rock band for sure. Syntesto. Yeah.
It does. Either, there is something 1970s about it.
70s and bad early 80s prog rock. Perhaps some Lindrums. I don't know if you remember those. Those do 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 do. Those.
Yeah.
You remember those? Yeah.
Remember, hey, them? Yeah.
Do you remember the venue? Massey Hall? Have you ever been there, Jonathan?
I have indeed, not to brag, but I've performed on stage at Massey Hall as J-Rock. I saw on the internet that you were there doing a big drum solo last week. What was that all about?
I Matthew Good and Jay Baruchel were doing a show, kind of like a town hall, good times, acoustic banter with the public kind of deal. And they oddly requested me to play a drum solo in the middle of it, just to kind of, I guess, bring some rock to the show, because it was all just acoustic. And I was more than happy to oblige that. I got up there and I did a little 8-minute drum shredzy, and it was good. It was fun. It was actually pretty cool to play drums in Massey Hall all mic'd up, and there's nothing else there. It was, and you know, to have the audience just kind of sitting there, you know, and you have to do something. And it was very different. It was very Carnegie Hall-esque.
But so do you have a plan for a drum solo, or you just kind of feel it?
I find it's just easiest just to play time and kind of have communication with the time, in a sense, like just fun with it. I'm not a big fan of setting up a big predetermined thing and going through it like... it has to be the way I practice it 4,000 times. That just, to me, doesn't work. I'd rather just kind of communicate in a feel. And that's usually how I do it. And that's kind of what I did. It's just you connect to the time and
to the people.
Mess around, yeah. Yeah.
And how do you know when it's over?
When you've kind of said what you can say, when you feel you've spent your vocabulary in a way, you know what I mean? It's kind of... you're trying to entertain and be fun, but you don't want to overbore people or, you know, do the same thing. It's, drum solos can easily be boring. Like, I'd say 99.9% of them are very not fun to watch. Like Moby Dick and Toad and anytime Elvin Jones sat behind a kit, or any, you know, Max Roach or classic jazz drummers, like those solos are always great because they have a time element. There's a continual feeling, a beat that flows through it, and that's what makes a great drum solo, not like a stopping and a starting and a showing off of talent, you know.
There's got to be a bit of grandstanding, though, doesn't there?
Well, I mean, grandstanding, it can be involved with just performance and time. You know, I'm talking about, like, you know, you see the drummer and he plays a big long technical fill and then stops and then does something else and then stops and changes the beat tempo and then stops again. And it's just like so spazzy and weird that just I don't understand the purpose of it other than, like you're saying, grandstanding. But in terms of it being cool and exciting, it's not.
Have you ever seen on YouTube sharp-dressed man wedding drummer?
I think so. Isn't that where the drummer just is going ape the whole
time? Yeah, it's like he brought an Uzi to a kitten fight.
Yeah.
It's so over the top. I think the band's called Rick K and the All-Nighters.
Yeah.
And he has a whole deep bag of tricks where he does like the Energizer Bunny and things like that while he's playing. But it's so over the top.
And you can just see him practicing each little thing over and over.
Yeah.
Is that the guy who like looks like Mr. Perfect, the wrestler?
Yeah, he does.
Right?
He does.
And he's like from Vegas or something, like classic.
And the guys in the band like don't really know what to do.
Yeah.
They have a couple little choreographed moves in the foreground.
He probably just demoralizes them all day and they're just owned by him.
Or they're like, Casper, can you tone it down a few notches?
Well, sometimes you see bands where the drummer is totally the leader and you can tell they're all victimized by him. There was a band, I don't want to say the name because it was hardcore, like how the drummer was like yelling at everybody. But it was
really
like one of those bands where they were progressive rock and they were well known and kind of not really metal, but they had like a metal front man, but it was more about the musicians in the band. Like every time each of the guys would be on the covers of the bass player and the guitar player and the drummer always was on the cover of Modern Drummer. And they were that kind of band where the singer was kind of an afterthought because of the music. It was so important, you know. And we played a show once with them, and I think it was in Providence, and I was just like aghast at the way the drummer was treating everybody during the sound check, just like yelling at everyone and telling them that they screwed it up and they have to redo it again. And then there would be like this meek little keyboard guy that was like doing these cheesy keyboard like practice moves, like moving between each keyboard, and like it was a sound check, you know, just practicing stuff. It was just one of those kind of bands, but the drummer would just lay down the law like it was in prison or something. It was
generally speaking, and present company excluded, aren't drummers kind of like the goalies of the hockey world? Like,
absolutely.
Kind of keep 100. To themselves, maybe march to the beat of their own drum, so to speak. Like, yep. They're often kind of odd characters, right?
Absolutely. They're always a little different. Not unlike like golf superintendents or, you know, when there's a job at a group of people that's a little bit different than everybody else, it has to be something that it's for some reason there's a working class feeling with drums and drumming.
Yeah, you said that before, that it's kind of like a trade. You always saw it as playing a trade
feeling to it. And I think the drummer is usually probably the most common guy in terms of chatter. That's just a biased comment from me, but usually, you know, when you see a guy who's a seemingly cool guy live or in the public, like a Dave Grohl or something, it's if he wasn't a drummer, that wouldn't be there, that foundation of why he's cool.
You know? Right, like you and Phil Collins.
I like Phil Collins because he was a great drummer. See, he always has that to fall back on, right? Even though he did all that cheesy shit.
He was a great drummer.
Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, no matter how many times you see the Take Me Home video or, you know, when he really went south, like Buster, all that stuff.
Oh, man.
Like, you still got to remember those first Genesis albums or Brand X or those great albums where it's just the drumming is just top notch and you can't it's always going to be give him credibility. It's like
I think we've done our share of Phil giving Collins Phil Collins talk. Props. Yeah,
Mario Lopez.
Yeah, let's get back to him. Hey, so this night with your Jay Baruchels and your Matthew Goods's, was it just For fun, or was it for a good cause? Like, was it a charity thing?
No, it was just a show. It was just for good times.
So what does Jay Baruchel do at the show?
He was just kind of hanging out and chatting and talking to the crowd, and they did a few, I guess you could call them bits, I guess, you know, with question and answer follow-ups with the crowd, and it was interesting. It was different, and I like the fact that they tried to do something different. You know,
is Matt Good a funny guy?
He is, yeah. I mean, everybody kind of knows that he's very opinionated and kind of staunch in his beliefs, and I appreciate that in a way. And I mean, we've had our issues in the past, like there are squabbles in the 90s, but that's just because of the people that we are and outspoken people. I think the fact that doesn't really matter what you say to somebody if you still respect them.
What do you mean? You two had some issues?
Well, I remember back in the 90s, there was stuff, we said stuff about him and he said stuff about us, and that just happens when you're kind of see each other. You can't be friends with everybody at all the time. And we had it was better for us than bad for us, because the press picked it up and ran with it, and we all got kind of more awareness because of that stuff. So people still think there's like some kind of hatchet to deal with, but it's been definitely buried a long time ago.
So when you saw him, was this the first time you've seen him in a while?
No, I've seen him from time to time. I've seen him around a lot, actually, in the last, not a lot, but enough I've been friends with him more than not friends with him, that's right, for sure. And I think I just appreciate the way he is as a musician. Like, he's a big fan of music, and he likes really cool music, and he's sits at home and writes music when he wants to, and he's very in the old school sense, the artist type, you know, and I can respect that. So
I have it in my mind that he kind of went away for a bit and he's back. Is that true?
In a sense, I don't think he stopped making music, but he kind of changed his flavor a little bit of music. I think the new music that I heard a couple of demos and stuff, the new stuff that he's making, it's definitely got a cool feeling and more of the mind of making music for fun as opposed to trying to formulate a song for the radio.
Right.
I believe he's just starting a show for FX, and he recently moved to Toronto, it's nice having him around. He's a great guy to hang out with.
Why is that show shooting in Toronto?
Yeah, yeah. By his design, he brought them, the American crew, up here to Toronto to shoot it.
Awesome. He's so Montreal proud. I'm surprised that he would leave.
Yeah, I think, I think he's just, maybe by virtue of the show, but he just wanted to kind of change things up a little bit. And Toronto's a cool spot, and it's not that far. I mean, it's only a quick 6-hour fire in the car or a 40-minute flight. So, I mean, it's not like he's that far away. And it's very Canadian to try something else in Canada, isn't it?
Totally. I was in Montreal last week, and I'm working on a new show for YTV with Samantha Bee from The Daily Show, who's just a delight. And Jacob Tierney is the guy who's directing it. And he and Jay Baruchel are often collaborators. And they made a movie called The Trotsky a few years ago that was one of the best Canadian movies ever made, for my money.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was talking about that, actually. He was actually talking about coming on the show. We have to have, we'll have a show with Jay coming up, for sure.
That'd be great. It's been a while since we've had guests.
I know. We're so low budge, Jay, Jonathan.
Well, contrary to what you read on Twitter, we're good buddies and we have a lot to talk about. Is it time that we bring up this tweet?
Yeah, this is a great. I like this one. So apparently we have some tension.
Somebody on Twitter is suggesting that you and I don't get along, or really that the problem is with me. It's from High Gage, and it should be noted that Gage is spelled incorrectly, G-U-A-G-E. Maybe the tension that I have is with High Gage. But anyway, the tweet is, boys love you big time, which is really nice, but there seems to be this tension between the two of you. Torin seems insulting at times.
Damn.
I don't mean to be, bud.
I know, and I didn't realize. Maybe it's my meek nature, JT.
I would see. I wouldn't call you meek.
I seemingly may cower after a laugh, where seemingly I might be giving a shit about something where I'm not.
Well, the other thing,
I would hope that we actually have some tension. I feel like we get kind of agree on a lot of things, almost maybe too many things, in as opposed to saying that we have some tension. I think that would be nice if we grinded each other up a bit. And I think if we ever disagree, we're not afraid to stay on that keel.
I think that's true. And the other thing is, you laugh easily, which is a really nice quality. I laugh like an 8-year-old girl, so it doesn't happen often, but when it happens, it's great. And unfortunately, my reaction to something funny is to say, that's funny, because I'm probably trying to analyze what makes it funny. But I cackle like a hyena, so maybe it would sound less tense if I laughed more.
Well, I mean, I don't know why we're friends then if there's tension like that, because like our conversations anytime, like we could be having lunch right now and it'd be talking about the same stuff. So if I felt like I was getting insulted, I'm pretty sure I can read insulting behavior and I would be pissed off.
What's that supposed to mean? Off.
I never get pissed off with you, JT.
Same with you, bud. So I sent out a tweet asking the people if they had any questions that they wanted to ask us. And this, it's like a real-time polling system. Chavo just asked, what are our favorite winter activities? Because I don't know if it's the same there, but boy, the temperature has shifted a lot in the last few days. What do you like doing in the wintertime, bud?
Oh, wow. It's already gotten really cold out there, has it, bud?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's like we bunny hopped right over fall, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was snow on the ground.
No, you're kidding me. Like, give me a, what are we talking about?
In fairness, yesterday was mid-20s and sunny.
What is it right now?
It's probably 11.5.
Oh, man, that sucks.
And now in April, I'd be in shorts and a singlet. But a hot summer, you're like, it's freezing.
See, it's like, it's actually, we've had really amazing warm temperatures. It was like 20 mostly this week here.
There was some 20 action here.
There was?
Yeah.
Yeah. So next week you're saying it's done.
Well, I'm going to Yellowknife tomorrow where it's below zero.
There you go. That'll be it. Like how long are you in Yellowknife for?
4 days.
That's it. By the time you get back, you'll have some little frost in the mornings.
It'll feel tropical here. Couple favorite winter activities, and then we'll take a break. What do you like to do in the winter, bud?
What do I like to do in the wintertime? Outside. I don't mind going tobogganing with the kids.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. There's a school hill right around the corner that gets really icy to the, you know, almost like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation icy. Mm-hmm. So there's actually spots where I won't go down, and it's not so... we get some variables of excitement.
You're worried that you'll get hurt?
Well, yeah, no, like vertical drops that are, you know, just heavy speed down to like into the concrete and then the school.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm kind of a wimp. I've never broken a bone in my body in terms of doing stuff like extreme. Like when I was a kid, I never was into doing crazy stuff on my bike because I didn't want to break my arm or legs, and I've been careful about that stuff. So I definitely don't go down the vertical drop on the sledsy. What about yourself on the winter trip?
Well, it's funny you should say that. We sound like a couple old fuddy-duddies because in the year 2000...
What do you do in the wintertime, do you, JT?
Oh, stay inside. Watch the storm out the window.
Hockey night, eh?
I broke my femur in a bunch of places in the year 2000, and such fear was instilled in me by the doctors that if I was to break it again, it would be really bad news. So I haven't downhill skied in a long time. Last year with the girls, I started tobogganing again. That's really fun. I also have a guy in my neighborhood named Bruce, and he has an outdoor rink. So there's some pickup hockey in the neighborhood. There's nothing, you want to talk Canadianity, playing hockey outside in the wintertime in the proud tradition of Who Gets Albert is about as Canadian as it gets.
And I totally numbskulled on the fact that I live on a lake and there's a rink in my backyard every year. And,
amazing.
I do intend on using that this year now that the kids are getting to that age where Albert is actually in the house.
Albert's in the house. There's also a rink not too far from me, like an actual rink. Won the first ever Kraft Hockeyville, and you can rent it for $60 an hour. So sometimes I big time myself and rent the rink just to be by myself on the ice for an hour, living the dream.
Come on.
Yeah.
Just doing it.
It's a pretty good feeling too. Yeah.
Rocky and Adrian styles.
Yeah. Yeah. Passing to myself off the boards.
Polly in the sitting down watching.
Keeping my head up. No, but the gentleman that lives in the rink, he actually was the guy who built the place. He's retired now. Lives in an apartment with windows that overlook the ice. So sometimes you'll see him up there pounding some cereal, watching the goings on the ice.
That's amazing. Hey, JT.
Yeah.
Let's take a break and we're going to come back with a little Can 70s. How about it?
Despite the terrible name we're in, Can 70s coming right up. Hang on.
JT.
Welcome back to Taggart and Torrens.
I'm Jeremy Taggart.
And I'm Jonathan Torrens. Did any
in
part
the
of you ever think it should be Torrens and Taggart?
Do the oh, already? We're here?
Well, no, did that ever cross your mind that maybe it sounds better? It doesn't, does it?
No, I think it's one of those things where you're like, I hate the fact that I feel biased to say that it sounds better, but it does, like Torrens and Taggart.
But
don't
you do that, like, if you have friends who are a couple, like Kevin and Jill or Jill and Kevin? Kevin and Jill just sounds better. Jill and Kevin's more work for your mouth. And
yeah,
but
right.
Sometimes there's like...
I'm practicing quietly with friends.
Me too. Sometimes there's Tracy and Stuart. And there's no easy way to say it. You just gotta...
Laird and Sasha. Sasha and Laird.
You have friends named
Chrissy
Laird and Sasha?
Tim and Chrissy. Chrissy and Tim.
I think Chrissy and Tim. Maybe it's if it ends in a vowel. Like Manda and Tommy. If it ends in a vowel, it's easier to run them together. But if it's like a hard consonant, like Kate and Brady.
Linda and Larry, or Larry and Linda?
Linda and Larry. I think it's Linda first.
Linda and Larry? What do you say? What say you, Larry and Linda?
Kyle and Mary. Mary and Kyle.
Greta and Barry. Barry and Greta.
Some couple names just don't go together. Tracy and Tom. Tracy and Tom.
Tom and Tracy?
Yeah, the N goes first. That's how you do it. Kevin and Amanda.
That's like...
Try to do two N names. Nevin and Noreen.
What's your son's name? Oh, he's Kevin.
Well, I love, by the way, like Deshaun and Le Kevin. I love that.
Oh, man. No, like how come there hasn't been like a Chris Martin, Gwyneth, like parent couple that like have called their kid Kevin or something?
My sister knows people that have two kids, Easton and Weston.
Here's my son, Brent.
I think as a parent, there should be a rule. Like if you spell your kid, if you spell your kid's name in a way that begs a follow-up question, like it's, what's a good one? It's like Hank, but it's Hanque. Like you shouldn't name your kid something that's like that requires explanation every time you say it.
No, but I like to Like, isn't it like full on, like some brand, like if you saw a tattoo of like a blown up toaster or something just way out there, it'd be like, here's my Kelly. Kelly.
This isn't a Kelly.
Kelly, come downstairs.
Well, I don't know. There are two urban legend things that have to do with kids' names. One is a girl working in like a Future shop or something. A friend told me that on her name tag, it said L-E and a straight line and the letter A. And he swears her name was LaDasha.
Oh, come on.
The other thing that exists on the internet is this girl whose brother is an obstetrician claims that he delivered a baby named Y'all Jealous.
Oh,
man. The kid's name was Y'all Jealous Jones.
Y'all Jealous!
Y'all Jealous?
Y'all Jealous, now come on now!
Hey, Y'all Jealous? Your kid's kind of starting behind the eight ball a little bit.
Oh, man, like, how do you not, you know, you have to be rich.
What's your name? Y'all Jealous?
It's like, you can't be a bum and be called Y'all Jealous.
Yo, what's Y'all Jealous up to? He dropped out of school and he's living in a halfway house. Y'all Jealous?
What's your name at the soup kitchen? Y'all Jealous? Pouring him some gruel. Breaking him some bread. Thank you. What's your name? Y'all Jealous?
I just have to check your name off this list for the free footwear. What's your name? It's Y'all Jealous. You're almost tempting fate.
Yeah, we're going to hell now.
Y'all Jealous? Alright, like, you might as well name your kid Could Be Better.
I'm sorry, you've been denied for your loan, Y'all Jealous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Y'all Jealous.
Let's play Can 70s.
Noreen Nick. Noreen Norbert.
There's an M before the N.
Noreen.
Nick. Nick. Kelly.
Like, I know a guy named Brant.
M and an N. Kelly.
Where do the apostrophes
Nick.
Go?
Huh?
Where do the apostrophes go?
There isn't any. Nick.
Nick. Hey, if
Randy,
if you're saying Taggart Torrens, where does the apostrophe go with the N?
On the other side, the right side
should go on both sides, shouldn't it? If you're, there's no A and no D.
I guess, yeah. We'll have to bring the scholar up.
Nishana. All right, let's play K70s. It's a terrible name for a great game in the proud tradition of K90s and Canadies. This is exactly like the couple thing. These two words don't go together, but we're forcing them to. K70s.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to have to take a quick break before I go because I have to blow my nose. I'm all swelled up on this. Okay?
Okay, we'll be right back.
Would you like some egg and beans? Fuck off! You're not my mom! Well, hello there. We're back, and I'm all settled.
You're listening to Torrens and Taggart.
Ooh.
It's not as good. Taggart and Torrens. Because I think it sounds like Tattern and Torn.
Taggart and Torn?
Yeah. Taggart and Torrens. That's why it rolls off the tongue. Because your brain makes it feel like fills in the blanks and assumes it's Tattern and Torn.
And we're ripping it up, too.
Yeah, we're ripping it up, bud.
And we're about to rip it up into some Can 70s, which is a terrible name game. What is it? The great game with the bad name.
Yeah. Now, I have to confess, this isn't, like, the 80s is my jam. I pulled off the 90s pretty well. The 70s I'm a little nervous about because my knowledge doesn't run as deep. But I think it's important that we're doing it.
We can't leave out the older generation of Canadianity.
Dude, we are the older generation now.
Yeah, I know. This is my wheelhouse, the 70s.
Is it? Okay, I'm going to go first then. Okay, you ready?
Well, yep.
Stand by. Here it comes.
People smile and tell me I'm the lucky one. And we've just begun. I think I'm gonna have a son.
This is great.
Do you know it?
He will be
no.
Like him and me.
Really? You'll know the chorus for sure.
Yeah, probably.
The sun is gonna shine above.
Here you go, bud.
And even though we ain't got money.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
here
we go.
Nice steel ride.
That's a great song, but I'm having a tough brain fart on who it is. I don't know why.
It's Anne Murray.
Anne Murray.
First Lady of Canadian Country. The song is called Danny's Song. I thought it was Even Though We Ain't Got Money. And it was written by Kenny Loggins.
Ooh.
I think maybe even like Loggins and Messina doesn't even technically count as full Canadianity for that reason. Have you ever crossed paths with the Anne Murray?
I have. I've on a golf course on a couple of times.
Great lady.
I don't put on Anne Murray records, but I know that chorus. I'll tell you that much.
She's sold something like 125 million records, some outrageous number like that, and she's humble and kind and good.
And she likes to rip the golf ball around.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
All right, hit me. Can 70s. Maybe
70s.
There's no N. Maybe it's K-70s.
Well, because then it's not Canadian anymore.
Right.
Without the N, right?
Right.
Okay, are you ready?
I don't know, but I'm going to try. Hit me.
Okay, we're going to hit it right now. Here we go. Oh, there's a little bit of a... sometimes on these videos, there's a little bit of a break
vamp
at the beginning. Eh? Yeah. You notice that?
I do.
But it's coming up right here.
No idea.
It's a classic.
Oh, Wild Eyes, awesome.
Yeah. Good old Wild Eyes by the Stampeders.
Stampeders.
The Stampeders.
I was wondering if it was BTO. That would have been my guess.
Yeah, no, they're a classic Canadian rock outfit, and I was actually surprised that they never went after the Chili Peppers on that riff, because that riff is very similar to that, don't stop, do-do-ba-do-be-dop, you know, that Chili Pepper song that goes, dip stop deep a dap a dee bop skitty bop. You know that one?
I want you to be an a cappella Chili Peppers cover band.
It has that same exact guitar riff.
Please do it again.
Scoop bop, stoop bop a dee dop, put it up, stop drop a beat up, best Joe, bop a dee doo.
My next TV show, you are going to a cappella record the theme song, and that's going to be the whole theme.
Oh, like the present theme song.
Babadoop. Yeah.
People right, probably think that's Gian Gameshi, actually.
Yeah, it sounds like him.
It's a little known fact that I did that years ago.
What is?
What's that?
What's a little known fact?
That I'm singing at the beginning of the TNT.
Is that you?
Yes. You didn't know that?
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da from something that you recorded from Taggart's Takes. I didn't know it was you going, buddle-yup, buddle-yup.
That's a series of me and a bunch of other people singing me.
Me, other people.
Me, other people doing some classic skitty-yup-bop.
Other Torme's. People, me.
Good stuff. Anyway, really now you stuff.
Know. The more you know.
So hit me with your rhythm stick, your Can 70s rhythm stick.
All right. I genuinely love this tune, and I genuinely love this band. It's not their biggest hit, but it's probably my favorite song of theirs. Have a listen.
Little Chilliwack.
Yeah, Fly at Night.
Yeah.
What a solid tune.
It is a great song.
And especially, like, it goes through so many changes.
It's
Bill, Bill is an unbelievable singer. Yeah. Little harmonics. I think Bill's still out on the road, isn't he?
Oh, I'm sure.
I was with Mike Smith in an 80s cover band called the Should've Been Gones. You try to pull off some 80s tunes. The 80s don't get enough credit. But I don't think Chilliwack got enough credit, too. They are musically gifted.
Absolutely. I mean, they had some big hits.
Love that tune.
That song was actually done quite well in Goon.
Was it?
They placed that in there. Jay placed that in there real nice.
We've come full circle. We're back to the Jay Baruchelses.
Sure. Yeah, well, it was a great placement for Canadianity, and I know he appreciates some good Canadian tunes.
More than most. Okay, good for you. You got that one. Hit me with your next one.
Okay, are you ready for my second?
I don't know.
This one starts out quite nice. It's got the fandom at the beginning, you know, like the experience you feel like you're actually there.
Okay.
Quite intense. Let's get this going here. Big crowd.
How impressed would you be if I knew it by the sound of the crowd?
That would be tough. But the crowd is actually jumping and running on stage and getting way crazy. Those nights in Montreal. He's growing facial hair, as we see right here.
It was a different time.
This man used to have 4-hour sound checks.
Really?
Oh yeah. Hardcore muso. Here comes. Wait for it.
Stop. And tell him. Is that Gino Vannelli?
That's right.
Nice. 4 hour chest, sound checks.
His chest hair is actually, it's so powerful. His chest hair probably writes its own songs.
If it was Wild Horses or Black Cars, I would have known it for sure. That's just a little earlier for me.
Yeah, we had to go way back. But yeah, Gino's known for being a real hardcore with the sound and having everything right, and in the studio being a real stickler.
Really?
Long ass sound checks.
Crazy. Didn't know that.
Yeah. He has the best chest hair and the longest sound checks in Canadian history.
Like, where's Gino Vannelli today?
I don't know. He's probably just sitting around wheeling some ladies in Montreal.
Yeah. Do you know what? Do you know what is
smoking some French cigarettes, perhaps?
Some Gauloises. Do you know what is important to note?
What's that?
Black cars do look better in the shade.
You know what else?
What?
There's the best skit in history when Eugene Levy did Gino Vannelli. Did you ever see that?
No.
They did that exact song, "I Don't Want to Stop," and he turns into a gorilla. Like, he grows hair as the song is going.
Eugene Levy has a new show coming out on CBC called Schitt's Creek.
Really?
Yeah. And it's he and Catherine O'Hara, and I think his kid, Dan, who was on MTV Canada, is the showrunner. And I think the story is, like, a formerly wealthy family has to move back to the small town where they're from and make a go of it. And the town is called Schitt's Creek, SCHITT'S.
Ah.
I'm excited to see it. I'm a big Eugene Levy fan.
I am too. I mean, there's been a lot of bad TV shows and very few good ones, and Eugene Levy usually gets involved with funny stuff.
Yeah, well, all the Christopher Guest movies, obviously. And if you If you work at a network and your job is kind of to cover your tracks because it's risk management, if something with Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara came across my desk, I'd probably be willing to take a flyer on it, that it has a better chance of being good than most things.
One of my favorite things ever as OLP, I got to interview Eugene Levy for Chart Magazine in the 90s. And I interviewed him for like an hour, and it was like a 3-page interview, and it was really in depth to the point where we got into like characters from SCTV, like Brian Johns, and talking about the writing in Edmonton and all of the glory days and the history of all that stuff. And he's such a great guy to talk about it. And he was very like happy to talk about it. He was into anytime I mentioned like a ridiculous character that he did, like Al Peck used fruit or something, he was so happy. He's like, oh, yeah! You know, he would get into it. And
I've never met him, but by all accounts, he's like the nicest guy you'll ever meet.
Yeah, and another guy that, you know, works a lot in L.A., but decided to stay in Toronto and live here and work out of here. So all kudos to Eugene, for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. And he's funny.
Hey, is it me, you next?
I think it's my turn.
Okay, go, hit me.
All right. Classic Ken 70s. Do you know it from The Vamp?
Yeah.
You do?
Do 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 boo. Triumph.
Yeah, yeah. Man, this is your jam. Double necked guitar.
Can you just sense Gilmore getting amped?
He went to pee.
Laying it on the line.
Man, you're on fire.
I did actually a Taggart's Take skit about this song. Ooh, here we go.
Here we go. Guess how many views that has on YouTube.
How many?
Guess.
2 million.
Yes!
Really?
Yeah, 2,176,000.
Pretty good guess.
That's a really good guess, but kind of surprising to me. Like, I would have thought that was more niche-y, but that's a mainstream number.
No, that was a full-bore hit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, I did a skit about that very song because Gilmore put kind of, when Triumph first started, he was already heavily involved in production and lighting and stuff like that, so... On their first tour, it was his lighting rig and all of that stuff that was out there. And he was like, he's always been kind of a businessman on that end from day one. And
no way.
Now he has that metalwork school, and he's had that studio there forever. And yeah, Gilmore was a lot more than just a drummer.
He crazy.
Likes to hit the sales floor.
And
the sales floor with more reckless abandon than the drumming that you hear in all of those 70s and 80s albums combined.
But that's probably sustained him, right?
Fucking right, eh?
All right, hit me. I'm not doing so well.
He's been rocking the Escalade for quite some time.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I thought of a new... this is the album title for J-Rock's next album. You ready?
Yeah.
Escalades and Accolades.
Ooh.
How dope is that?
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very cool. Are you ready?
I am. Hit me.
This is a live one. I'm not sure how the sound quality is going to be. Bear with me here.
Bearing.
But you're going to know the song. A lot of older folks in the crowd. This is a current show. People are still... horny for it, though. Absolute. The piano player's going a little apeshit here. Oh, like there's a little... taking some liberties. Taking a little liberties intro here, JT?
Yeah.
Holy boots. Some clams, too. Here we go.
I'm having trouble hearing it, bud, to be honest with you.
It's the boys in the bright white sports car.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Is that Loverboy?
No, that would be, sorry, that would be Trooper.
A Trooper.
Classic Canadian band. But that,
Trooper played in Truro a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think many folks went.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that piano intro to that song.
They were here for a good time.
Not a long time.
Right.
They had a lot of hit songs, though, like boatloads.
What were other Trooper songs?
Pretty Lady.
Oh, What a Night? Was that Trooper?
General Hand Grenade.
Who sang Oh, What a Night? That's the song that...
Raise a Little Hell, that's a big one they had. Two for the Show, that was a big one.
Two for the Show.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a Canadian band that... Who did Oh, What a Night from Canada? Like, it was the Dell song originally.
That song just makes me want to shop.
That song just makes me want to punch someone in the throat.
Here we go, I'm going to get it for you.
Oh, What a Night and Old Time Rock and Roll, those are the two no thanks.
Well, it depends. Which,
I picture girls with no high heels on, like they've taken their high heels off, with Orion Ginger hoisted over their head, skipping to the dance floor, went doom, bunk, gung, ga-ding, ding, doom, dum, ching, doom, doo, dit.
I'm getting the Four Seasons version in Frankie Valli, so I don't know the one you're talking about.
Oh my God, Marcy, let's dance. Doom, bum, bum, ba-jing, ding.
Yeah, I can't find it. Can you?
Find Oh, What a Night?
Oh, What a Night?
Yeah, but I don't want to.
Yeah, no, it's not necessary.
What are your, what are your songs that... Oh, it's April Wine that did a cover of it.
A cover of it? It's a cover.
No, that
can't
be right.
I can't stand that song. I just... I'm happy to not know enough about it. We should get Andy Frost on the line or something.
It's a terrible song. Did I ever tell you... By the way...
Let's move on.
This is a Kin70s story, and I don't think I've ever told you this. When I was guest hosting The Q, Andy Kim, songwriter behind Sugar Sugar...
Ooh, yeah.
...was on as a guest, and we really hit it off. He's a good dude. And he holds the distinction of writing a number one song, which Sugar Sugar was. I think he was 16 or 17. And that song went to number one. And I think it's the only song in history that was a number one hit with no actual band. They were all studio cats, and they weren't an actual working touring band.
Well, I mean, that was pretty common, though, back in the 50s.
Right.
To have a single, yeah.
Was that 50s or 60s?
50s and 60s, I'm saying, like when they did those kind of recordings where it would just be, you play the, you know, the band is always the same guys in the room and that's the end of that, come in and go.
So here's the weird story. Andy Kim leaves behind his SOCAN mug, which is the Union for Songwriters, as you know.
Yeah.
He like comes in with some herbal tea or something, leaves it behind in the studio. We exchanged coordinates because we really got along.
Mm-hmm.
So I emailed him that night and said, hey man, thanks so much for coming in. It was really nice to meet you. By the way, you left your mug behind. And he writes back and says, oh, cool. Yeah, it was great to meet you too. I'm sure I'll see you again at some point.
Yeah.
So I think, I can't remember if I said, let me know if you want your mug back and I'll FedEx it to you. Ha ha ha. Like some kind of whatever.
Yeah.
2 months later, I'm at home in Nova Scotia. I took the mug home with me. Yeah. And I was renovating a house at the time, so I had like some paint on it and stuff. Like I'd been using the mug after sterilizing it, of course.
Yeah.
And my phone rings, and it's John Street Security at CBC in Toronto saying,
come on.
Oh, no, it was a producer on Q who said security just called up to him. Andy Kim is at the security desk. He's here to get his mug.
Come on.
And I said, well, I have the mug, but it's in Nova Scotia and has some paint on it and stuff. Like I guess I read that wrong. I'm happy to send it back if you want. So he's like, no. Just a second, let me check. And he comes back on the phone and says, yeah, if you wouldn't mind sending it back, that would be great.
Holy cow.
So I had to FedEx back the Andy Kim mug that had some paint on it and stuff. And it was just so weird.
You couldn't get the paint off.
Couldn't get the paint off, no.
Did he say anything about it?
Or no.
Are you done?
No, we've never exchanged pleasantries or anything since.
So you're done.
Well, I assume it's been, yeah.
I think assume, it is. I think you're done with the AK, man.
I assume if I saw him on the street, he'd be like, hey, remember that mug thing?
Yeah, and he might fucking punch you in the face.
He might. It might be street sense. Awesome. Who are you calling princess all over again?
I love the fact that he went back down there.
Yeah.
And then, like, you just never heard from him again.
But have you ever had a situation like that where you completely misread something, or you thought it was a joke and it turned out that people weren't joking, or it's a weird one?
Yeah, no, that happens. That happens in life all the time. That sucks.
Like, it's like you and I having tension. I didn't even know we had it, and yet here this person on the internet thinks we do.
I know. Maybe we need to talk to somebody, like a mediator, just to feel us out.
Yeah, maybe that should be the next episode.
I thought I could read people, but I guess I can't.
Hey, it turns out I got skunked in K70s. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll take some of your questions from the Twitter machine. Hang on.
Tidy's calling you Studley.
And we're back.
Welcome back to N'Taggart Torrens. Did I put the N in the right place?
I want to. You do it in the morning again. I like that. The way that it rolls off.
You're listening to Taggart and Torrens in the morning.
Yeah.
Here's Nickelback. Good morning. Hey, your thoughts on the Chadville divorce?
Chad have broken up with Avril. They're not together anymore. Taggart and Torrens in the morning.
See, Chad and Avril, it's obvious whose name comes first. Avril and Chad is just a tongue twister. No. Chad and Avril, that's easy.
I could have called that one. I'm glad they didn't have a kid. That would have been the only problem there.
Have you met yourself some Avril Lavigne?
Yep.
Nice gal?
Good times.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She's just a little sea monkey-sized wisp of a thing, isn't she?
Yeah, for sure. I got drunk with her a couple times back in on tour.
Yeah.
The people in her band were great. I don't know if it's the same guys, but we opened up for Avril when she was, like, massive in Europe. And she was like a really young kid at that time, was just so popular. And Our Lady Peace was opening for her in Europe, which is, talk about a weird combo.
Crazy.
But her band were great, all great guys. And we always had fun. But I had to get drunk for any like laughs to be had. That's what I always noticed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Speaking of
really drunk, and then you have fun with Avril and the band, and then other than that, you just kind of play
the band and toys. Avril and the band. Speaking of odd pairings, Dan Hennessy sent us a message asking, "What did Taggart think of having Ludacris open for OLP in Charlottetown last summer?"
Yeah, that was cool because it was just Ludacris seeing him around, and he was the fact that he was there and into it and like loved it, super professional. We've played with lots of hip hop bands from like Outkast to Run DMC to Public Enemy, and the whole thing is true where they say rap bands take forever to go on stage. Like we played a show once in Baltimore or something, and we were supposed to go on after Run DMC, and that literally, like, they didn't even get there until like 12 o'clock at night.
Really?
So it was like, yeah, just really bizarre. I mean, and we'd played festivals with rap bands, and they would always take forever to get on stage. And just like that, the idea of chilling out and taking your sweet ass time is just kind of part of the deal, as like, I guess, like a stance, you know? So, did play with when we played with Ludacris, it was the complete opposite. He was, you know, right there jumping up, tons of energy, loved the crowd, super happy. And that probably makes sense why he's so successful, to be honest.
What a drag to have to go on after. Like, if Run DMC didn't go on till midnight, does that mean you guys are going on at 2?
Yeah, like it was always everything would get pushed back, or like sometimes you'd have to just go on and they would go on. You know, the old classic Fillmore thing where you go on anyway if somebody's late. So or sometimes bands back in the Fillmore days in the 60s, they would just like wait and not go on, and the other band would have to go on. Like just crazy stuff like that.
Wow. Gary Hogan wants to know, what is the most mind-blowing live concert you ever attended?
That's a great question. Gary Hogan is a great friend of the show.
Yeah, he is.
And always has a good question. Do you have an answer for that off the top?
Well...
Or would you like me to rip one out?
Well, there are several answers, I guess, depending on how you interpret the question. I saw Dire Straits. I was in the front row as a teenager and a would-be guitar player. And seeing Knopfler that close was really cool.
That's pretty big.
When I was six, I was taking classical guitar lessons. I saw Leona Boyd at the Confederation Center in Charlottetown. I would say that was mind-blowing at the time. But I would say overall for musicianship, maybe the concert that I had the least expectations for and was the most surprised was I saw Paul Simon in Halifax on the Rhythm of the Saints tour. It wasn't...
Oh, that was great.
Wasn't a spectacle. It wasn't a mind-blowing affair. But as a concert goes, like musicianship, unbelievable. Some of the...
Yeah, that was a...
World music musicians that he had with him were just crazy.
He had like Steve Gadd on drums on that tour. That was crazy that the players that he had on that album and tour. That was a famous tour for that specific reason.
Was it?
Just how tight they were. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was heavy duty. I also saw Paco de Lucia, who's a flamenco guitar player at the Montreal Jazz Festival. He was 4 hours late, and it was about 37 degrees Celsius in there, and people just sat in their seats and nobody moved. And he came out, I guess his flight was late, and he just said, sorry, and proceeded to play for 3 hours and blew the roof off the joint. That was pretty spectacular too.
That's cool. For me, I've seen Elvin Jones Jazz Machine was pretty amazing to see that level of talent.
That's like a pilgrimage for you, right?
Yeah, just Elvin was there. There's Joe LaBarbera, Eric Lewis was playing piano. It was just an insane collection of musicians. Jeff Buckley, seeing him was pretty amazing. Wow. I saw him open up for Juliana Hatfield in Toronto in 94. And nobody really knew who he was. And because we were on Columbia at the time, I got a release of the record early and became a huge fan of him right away before really kind of he hit the streets. And seeing that show was incredible because his voice was something to behold. To see him sing live, he was one of those guys who never really had to warm up, never had to practice, just jumped out stage on stage and just killed it, like unreal. And that band that he put together on that first tour and album, the Grace record, was really special. So Jeff Buckley for sure, getting to meet him. He tried to wheel my girlfriend out front afterwards.
Did he?
I actually could appreciate that because he was, you know, he's Jeff Buckley and the girl was hot, whatever. Good stuff.
Were you almost honored?
No, I was kind of like, whatever, you know, he didn't do anything. He was just trying. So it was just, I was into the idea of the fact that he was like just doing that thing was fine, but it's just a good story, I guess. Other live stuff, like playing with Page and Plant was cool because they had that like amazing orchestra with them. They had those amazing Eastern drummers.
Cool.
Ensemble playing with them that were spectacular, and they had a great band. They had Poral Thompson and Michael Lee on drums. It was really great. In terms of like small stuff, I've seen Radiohead a couple times. They're always something to behold.
And that's like spectacle, right?
Well, no, but it depends. I saw them once at like a smaller venue in Toronto, and it was just great to see them in somewhere small because they're one of those bands that are great to, they understand where they are and they can play to the room. Like if they're in a small, like if they're in a basement, they'll play differently than if they're in the Rogers Center.
Right.
You know, they understand that that's a completely different thing, and they'll take to that with that idea. And Radiohead always brings it, and no matter what, if you're seeing them acoustically or in a huge arena, it's always worth it.
I saw
never disappoints.
I saw Matt Mays and Jeremy Taggart play at a house party in Charlottetown. Yes.
That was and I was playing left-handed drums. Remember that?
Weird.
Yeah,
that'd be hard to wrap your head around.
The drummer was left-handed, and I was like, "Well, I wanted to jam, but it was a little bit of a mix-up in terms of my brain, but it worked out fine. We had some good jamming."
So, what do we do next week? Play Canots? We can't keep going back in the vault.
No, well, we'll mix it up. I think we eventually we should get a wheel because we've created so many amazing games.
I know.
We should create a wheel and spin it.
I was thinking about like Colin Pranks and Poem Sayin'. It's time to revisit some of those games.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's another one in the books for this week, bud.
Thanks, JT.
Really fun talking to you, and thanks for listening to Taggart and Torrensen.
Great talking to you, and I don't feel like I've been insulted whatsoever.
Take care, and bye.
Bye, and keep blocking out the haters.
Don't waste my time. Okay, could we get like two bombs at the end and bigger? Like, we need bigger bombs, eh, guys?